Mother was late home. She rang from Bailden to say she'd be late. The home help stayed as long as she could, but Brian's not good with the kids, and their Ryan can be a bit of a handful. I didn't mind, really, I didn't. I don't like to be a burden. And to be honest, I jumped at the chance of a bit of time to myself. It's one of the drawbacks. Of course, people are only being helpful, but it can get annoying always having help on hand. Don't get me wrong, I'd have a lot more bruises if I was on my own. And I don't wish to be ungrateful, really I don't, but it is nice, you know, to occasionally have a bit of peace and quiet. Not that I did. Them kids next door were thump-thumping. And then the phone rang. It was Alan. He wanted to know what I was wearing, which was a most unusual request. And then he said something even stranger. He said there was a woman on Summerfield's roof and she looked like me. I said we don't shop at Summerfield. Which is, of course, the truth. Mother is strictly a Sainsbury's person. We did used to go to Tesco, but that's all stopped because of what Shirley Porter did to Cousin Eric. I didn't say this to Alan. He was paying for the call, and those mobiles don't come cheap. So I asked him what this woman was doing on Summerfield's roof. It seems she was preaching. And she must have been very entertaining, because he said she'd drawn quite a crowd, which only goes to show what a numpty Alan can be. I have my convictions, but I've always taken the attitude that religion is like hobnobs, something best kept to yourself. But there was no sense saying this. Alan is the manager in Sketchley's. He sounded a bit disappointed that it wasn't me. But he said he'd call round after tea. I told him he was welcome to call whenever he liked. To be honest, he has a soft spot for me, as I have for him. And it's nice to have someone who can tell me what Deirdre is wearing on Curry. For a big man, he has very descriptive powers. And he's much better at this than Mother. She might start out with a description of a lilac collar, but she soon gets sidetracked into neck muscles and the strength of Anne Kirkbride's glasses, which I think is harsh. The poor woman has been through so much, and she'd have never married Samir if she'd not had illness in her personal life. Mother made it back just in time. I was in dire need of the loo. The home help had moved one of the chairs and for some reason I couldn't get round. I heard Mother rustle through the front door. She'd been shopping. I could hear the bags. And when I'd done my business, I listened to her rustle round the kitchen. I'm not sure wearing all that man-made fibre is safe. I tried to tell her, but she's not one for natural fibres. If God had wanted us to wear cotton, he wouldn't have given us Velcro. This is her gem of wisdom on the question. I didn't take any notice. In fact, I try not to listen to anything she says. I used to correct her, but I don't anymore. And I only did it to help her socially. It had nothing to do with my A-levels, as she claims. Wisdom comes with age, she said. And as I'm older than you, I must be cleverer. Which makes no sense at all. Alan took me to Ilkley today. I think it pushed Mother's nose out. We asked her to come out of politeness, but she said there were too many hills. And then she added, quite unnecessarily in my opinion, that she didn't want to play a gooseberry. I didn't argue with her. Like I said, we only asked her out of politeness. There were a few curtains twitching as Alan lifted me into the car. Not that I was looking across, but I've lived in our street long enough to know the way they think. Any woman seen with any man is automatically courting. Any woman of a certain age, that is. No sooner had we set off than I took the bull by the horns and brought up the subject of Summerfield's roof. "What made you think it was me?" I said. I'm sure the dry cleaning chemicals have turned his brain. Because he said, "She looked like you. She was wearing dark glasses." There must be hundreds of women in dark glasses. It's summertime. Dark glasses is what people wear in the summertime. But rather than challenge him directly, I adopted the oblique approach. "What was the weather like?" I said. Alan had to think about this. But he sparked my guns by saying it was sunny. I let it lie, as I could not be sure on account of being boxed in by the home help. I wasn't trying to trick him. Really, I wasn't. and nor was I trying to make him look small. But I was troubled by the idea that he thought me the type of woman who would roll up on Summerfield's roof, and that he thought me the type of woman to begin preaching without invitation. I don't even like talking in public. I've only been on the stage once. I was the third shepherd in the school nativity. I didn't even have a present for the infant saviour, and I didn't have a line. I just stood there, with a tea towel on my head, looking nervous. Me dad said I stole the show, but I knew he was just being nice. He was like that, me dad. He always looked for the good in people. Alan reminds me of him. They both speak softly and slowly. I think it's a sign of their kindness. Mother says it's because they're gormless. I'm so glad I don't take after her. I'm also pleased I haven't inherited her glands. Alan started telling me about the problems he was having with the Batley branch. They'd been overwhelmed with work due to an outbreak of weddings. It was all too much for one branch to handle, so they farmed the work out to Batley, which turned out to be a disaster. They sent everything back unmatched. It was a terrible added burden to Alan's workload, and I told him so. I meant it sincerely, but he took it as me being sarcastic. We had a bit of a tiff. We only stopped snapping when I asked him where we were. Menston, he said. Oh, that's good, I said. We must be nearly there. Now, whether he said this because of the tiff, or in an attempt to inveigle his way back into my affections, but he said he'd been planning the trip to Ilkley for weeks. He'd even been putting a little of his wages aside so that he could take me for tea in Betty's tea rooms. Oh, I felt like a princess. I reached out to touch his knee, or at least that was the plan, but we must have hit a bump, as I ended up grabbing hold of his elbow. He appreciated the gesture and we both had a laugh, which was nice. I tried to encourage him to tell me more of his stories. It may sound funny, but I like to hear Alan talk about his work. It's the little details I find so interesting. Tales of lost buttons are not to everybody's taste, but he talks with such gusto. It's not easy to ignore the plight of a manager in a dry cleaner's. In next to no time, we found a parking space. He was telling me about a woman from Queensbury who turned nasty at his refusal to release a silk dress without the correct ticket. I told him he'd done right. Silk dresses don't grow on trees, and just because she lives up the hill, that doesn't mean she can lord it over the rest of us. He appreciated the solidarity, and I'm pretty certain that all the nastiness of the tiff was forgotten. Of course, had I known how much Betty's charge, I'd have never come. For the price of a tea and a bun, I could have caught the bus to Scarborough. Alan tried to tell me he had the money, but I put my foot down. I would have choked on my tea cake, knowing I was taking advantage of Alan's thrift. I'm not one of those women that are impressed by wealth, and I don't want Alan to think that I am. We ended up sitting on a bench by the church at the end of the high street, with a packet of doughnuts and a couple of pasties. I had traditional Cornish and Alan had cheese and onion. You can say what you like about Greggs, but they do give you change. Mother took me to the hospital today. They're monitoring my journey into darkness. I don't mind, really, I don't. It's nice in a way, it gives me another reason to get out of the house. And it's good for Mother too, because there's usually someone she knows who's in for minor surgery. I've stopped her coming to the meeting with the consultant. She does tend to interfere. And I was a bit uncomfortable with Mother knowing me every failing. So, now she goes down to General Surgical and I ring her on the mobile when I need her to come and pick me up. I've got a new doctor. A South African, Dr. Leibaum, an odd name. He's very good and very keen to try all the latest methods. To be honest, I feel he's wasting his time. I realised a long time ago there was nothing that could be done short of visiting Jesus. It would have been around the time we passed the 65%. I couldn't tell a cat from a corgi. His latest idea is to inject me with something called Vicodin, and then use lasers in the hope of stimulating the optic nerve. The only drawback is that for 3 days I would be liable to spontaneously combust if exposed to a light source greater than 30 watts. I like a challenge, but I can do without that sort of excitement. Imagine opening the fridge to get some milk and the next you know your left arm is on fire. Or in my case, opening the cupboard to get the teapot and accidentally opening the fridge and suffering third-degree burns to me shins. I thanked him for considering the option. But I said, stimulating my optic nerve is like trying to jumpstart a car with no engine. I think he got the idea, because he said, oh, I love the way you English mangle your language. Which sounded to me like the sort of thing an American tourist would say. I certainly wasn't expecting him to open today's consultation in the way that he did. No sooner had I parked in his office than he told me he'd seen a woman who looked just like me leading the service at the Methodists in Shipley. I was gobsmacked. I told him flatly I was not that woman, and that he was not the first to make the comparison, though I was relieved that she'd taken up a more formal and less dangerous style of evangelising. To change the subject, I remarked that I was surprised that Dr. Laban was a nonconformist. This sparked a minor theological discussion about the roots of Protestantism and the role of the Dutch Reformed Church in convincing him to become an eye surgeon. It seems that the pastor persuaded him to continue in his studies as a way of helping him avoid conscription, and that the Shipley Methodists were the closest thing he found to his church back home. Seemingly because they had mouth organists and guitars, neither of which is my cup of tea. Far too louche. I prefer something with a little more dignity. The last thing I want in a church is the Lonnie Donegan Revival Society. Not that I go to any sort of church these days. I've had a bit of a crisis of faith. I realise it is uncharitable, and that worship is not about the giving but the receiving, but I don't have much to thank God for. I have life in my lung and food on my table, but as for the rest, the Lord has dealt me a very rough hand.